Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Founders Grid, sponsored by Gaper.io. Today we have Ralph. Ralph is the Chief Economist and SVP of Analytics at Haus. Ralph, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mustafa. Thanks for having me.
So can you give us a brief background about yourself, what you've been doing prior to joining Haus?
Sure. Well, you know, currently, in addition to my role at Haus, I serve as a chief economic advisor for a real estate data company called Cocoon, and I'm also an adjunct assistant professor at the University of Southern California, where I teach urban economics. Prior to that, I was deputy chief economist at CoreLogic, which is another real estate data company. And before that, I was chief economist for Trulia. My background is in housing economics, and have been an economist for the last 8 years or so. But prior to that, I was in the academy. I was a full-time professor at San Jose State University and the University of South Australia. My education is in urban economics and planning from University of California, Irvine, and economic geography from the University of Arizona.
Got it. Makes sense. So thank you so much for the introduction. So just kind of like keeping the conversation relevant towards the last 12 to 15 months, you know, let's start with the housing market. Then you know, it's gone through an interesting ride. So do you want to give some insights or feedback on this? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, the housing market has just absolutely boomed over the last 12 to 15 months. And, a lot of that, of course, is due to the changing dynamics of the workplace and the changing dynamics of home. I mean, those things for many people have become one. And not, I would say most of those people were, you know, they've combined home and work, weren't necessarily used to their home also being their workplace. You know, traditionally we're used to getting up in the morning, getting ready for work, you know, traveling to a separate place, working in that separate place, and then leaving and coming back home. Now, our commute is basically getting up out of bed and walking to our office or, you know, our couch or wherever, you know, we're doing work from. And, you know, that has actually led, I think, a lot of people to rethink, how they actually live and how they work. And if some employers, not all, but if some employers are allowing either full-time remote work or at least part-time remote work, you know, people are rethinking their home because they have to work in it, right? And so there's been, probably a non-trivial number of households that have decided, okay, well, I can't make it work. You know, I like working from home, but I can't make it work in the home that I live in. Many folks are trading, or at least thinking about trading their existing home for another one, or they're deciding to do a bunch of work to their own house to make it more suitable for remote work, to, you know, working from home. You know, instead of, for example, having to work out of a closet or work on a couch, maybe they are, you know, converting a bedroom into an office, or they're converting a garage into an office, or maybe they're, you know, building a, you know, a work shed in the backyard where they can feel like they're going to a separate space to work, and they can have quiet, and they can be separated from the distractions of, you know, their main home. So it's certainly been a disruption, from that physical space that we have, but also for those, for some employees who've been able to work completely remotely and will continue to do so. It also means that perhaps they can live somewhere that, is very, very remote from where they were working before. So say, for example, I've just hired a senior economist at Cocoon, and this person was living and working in the DC area. That person no longer works in the DC area, it worked for Cocoon. And I think they are planning a move outside the area, imminently, because they can take advantage of, they can, make wages that are, close to the wage they would have made living in say the DC area, but they can get the cost of living elsewhere. So that's kind of what we've seen with the housing market. That's what we've seen, you know, individual workers who do have their remote option, start to rethink where and how they live. And at least in the short run, it's been quite disruptive to the housing market. Home prices are absolutely booming, not necessarily because of that, but also because interest rates are low. So it's been an interesting time to be a housing economist, that's for sure.
True. Thank you so much for that. So now, our podcast, we keep them within 8 to 12 minutes, short, precise, focused. So we try to keep them relevant towards, the remote work and everything. So now let's kind of like going flashback into July, August, September last year. That's when, teams started discussing Zoom fatigue, and mental stress and those kind of things. So did you face those challenges with your team, and what kind of efforts you did both at personal and company level to trying to overcome all of this?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think all of us, at house at some point last year started to experience Zoom fatigue and sitting in front of a screen all day instead of, grabbing coffee with your workmate, right? Or grabbing lunch or something, really started to take a toll in its way. So, we did start to adapt as a leadership team by trying to cluster meetings on certain days. So in other words, instead of having meetings spread out over the entire week at different times of the day, we did try to cluster them on specific days. And so one day might be a meeting day, right? And then you would have free days where you didn't have very many meetings. And I think that allowed people to kind of work at their own pace, work at their own schedule, because everyone's different, right? Some people like to work late at night. Some people like to work early in the morning. And so the more flexible we could be with people's natural rhythm, I think the easier remote work became. Of course, we had to all be on meetings at some point, but we tried to make those clustered and really free up blocks of time. And we think that's made it a little bit easier for people to work with their own schedule, number one. And then also number two, maybe have, random interactions, through Slack or through spur of the moment meetings with their colleagues. And we're really starting to get into a good rhythm of how we all work well remotely.
Good. Makes sense. Interesting. So my last couple of questions would be around, since, with the vaccination happening at a record pace, there's multiple conversations going on. Will we go back to the old normal? Will we be hybrid? Or will we be 100% or more? What's the future going to be like? So, being a housing economist, you would have done your work on that. So do you want to share some insights with us on that?
Yeah, the cop-out answer is that it's complicated and it's going to depend on the industry. There are certain industries where face-to-face knowledge spillovers are very, very important. In other words, places where information, the value of information occurs in an informal way, right? Me going out to lunch with someone or grabbing coffee with someone or meeting in the lunchroom and having a casual chat about something and learning things that we didn't know before, right? And that can happen within a firm, but it can also happen between firms, right? Within a firm, it's a little bit easier to do through Zoom because, I can call up my boss or I can, call someone else I work with. That's relatively easy. But what's lost is, the inter-firm connections, right? Like me going to grab a coffee with someone that works at another firm randomly, say in downtown San Francisco, and then there's that knowledge exchange. That's not happening as much. So industries that really benefit from that sort of thing, I think you'll start to see employees gravitate more towards the old normal, right? Being in a city, being in an office, having those exchanges. That said, though, I think there will be aggregately less demand to be in those areas with a flexible workspace. So what's likely to happen is workers in those industries will still probably need to live close by, maybe not immediately, because they're not going in every day, but they might live more on the periphery, right? They might move out a little bit more and come in 2 or 3 days a week. There's going to be other industries where that sort of thing doesn't really matter a whole lot. You can think of sort of support industries. Maybe it's IT support, or maybe it's just companies that consult with software development or database management or those sorts of things where the knowledge spillovers aren't as important. I think you're going to see firms in those industries start to go more fully remote because they rely less on knowledge spillovers. And, you know, the knowledge spillovers that they do benefit from, you know, might be substituted, you know, through these virtual channels, right, through Zoom or Slack or whatever. So I mean, there's also benefits that firms have to weigh with respect to, you know, the value they get from knowledge spillovers internally against the higher cost they have to pay people to be in an office, right? They have to pay for office space. They have to pay their employees more to live nearby, you know, whereas in a distributed workforce, maybe they're not getting as much value from the knowledge spillover, but maybe they're getting, you're saving a lot because, you know, their employees, you know, housing costs are less, right? And they have to pay for less office space. So, you know, I think we're still working through that dynamic and, you know, the new normal, you know, remains to be seen exactly where it's going to settle. But I think it's going to be somewhere between where we were at, say, at the end of last year and where we were before the pandemic.
Got it. So last question, Ralph, you know, what personal changes you've done into your daily routine that helped you navigate through the pandemic in a much better and efficient way?
I try not to work in, you know, eight-hour chunks anymore. You know, going into an office, you really were working in an 8, 9, 10 hour chunk, and then going home and trying to, you know, find your peace and quiet time either before work or after work. I work more in smaller blocks now. You know, I might work, you know, two to three hours, and then I'll go take a 2 hour break, and then I'll work maybe another two to three hours, and then I'll take an hour break, and then maybe, you know, do a little bit of work before I go to bed. That's been the big change in my own workflow. I just sort of naturally work better that way. And so, you know, it's not to say everyone works like that, you know, but there are certain folks who, you know, may actually be able to do, you know, say individual contributors may be able to do all of their work that they would normally do in like 5 or 6 hours because they're at home, right? Imagine if you, you know, were an individual contributor and you were having to, write a bunch of code one day. Well, if you're in the office and you're getting lots of interruptions, maybe it takes you 8 hours to get 6 hours worth of work done, right? But if you're at home and you don't have those distractions, you know, you might be able to get all your work done in 6 hours, and then you have, you know, more time in a day, either to yourself or to work on other projects and be more productive. So, you know, to each their own. But, you know, the biggest change for me has been sort of segmenting the workflow throughout my day rather than having it be in just one big chunk.
Got it. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you so much for being on the show. Sure. You know, we would have loved to, we would have easily spoken for another half an hour, but we try to keep these podcasts within 12 minutes. Thank you so much for being on the show. Take care of yourself and stay safe.
You too. Thank you, Mustafa. Take care.